Cantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents The Gentleman's Spy by Erica Vetch, narrated by Mary Sarah. Chapter 1, Haverley Manor, Oxfordshire, England, January 1, 1814. He supposed that someday he would have to forgive the child for being a girl. Marcus Haverley took one look at the squirming pink bundle in the nurse's arms and sighed. The weight of the world threatening to push him into the ornate rug beneath his Hessians. He set down the book he'd been reading. His appetite for the written word of upbreaking his reality set in. His mother dragged into the study, her shoulders slumped, her hands lax. Who was more disappointed? He would hate to have to live on the difference. He rose, put his hands into the pockets of his breeches, and went to stand before the window, staring out into the night. Frost rimmed the edges of the panes, and in the distance, black trees lifted skeletal arms toward the moon.
"How is Scylla?"
he asked.
"The accoucheur has just gone. He said everything went well, but that she needs rest."
Mother's voice sounded as if she spoke from the bottom of a pit.
"I can't bear it."
"Her girl?" Marcus glanced over his shoulder in time to see her sink into a chair, the very picture of despair. The poor woman. All her hopes dashed in a split second. The child squeaked and snuffled, drawing his attention. He should at least go and look at his niece. After all, he'd been anticipating the birth for months. The birth that was supposed to set him free. She had a tuft of dark hair atop her round head. An impossibly tiny hand lay next to her full cheek. The nails minute and faintly blue. Sparse lines of colour indicated where her eyebrows would be some day. He didn't know if he'd ever met a baby as fresh as this one. Though he searched her features, he could find no resemblance to either of her parents. Overall, she looked a bit like an old man, though he would never say so to Scylla. She was much too frail a flower to accept even the mildest of teasing. Looking at the baby's helpless little face, as innocent as a person could be, he felt a stirring somewhere in his heart. He would do his duty by her. He owed that much to Neville.
"Take her to the nursery. See that she has everything she needs."
He nodded to the nurse, a woman nearly twice his age, thoroughly interviewed and scrutinized by his mother a month ago, and passed as acceptable. When she had departed, Marcus went to the desk. His desk now, he supposed. It was all his. The desk, the study, the house, the grounds, and the responsibilities. What a way to start the new year.
"What are we going to do now?"
Mother eyed him from under the black lace trim on her black cap, her iron grey curls clustered about her face. Lines of strain showed around her eyes and mouth.
"This is an unmitigated disaster."
Marcus jammed his thumb and forefinger into his eyes at the bridge of his nose and breathed. Why was there no air in this place? A cannonball lodged in his chest, cold and heavy. First his father and brother. And now this? Every event bound him to his burdens with more chains and hawsers than a frigate to the dock. Mother sniffed and he lowered his hand, digging for his handkerchief. He needn't have bothered. She had one and dabbed her eyes with a black scrap of linen.
"I'm surprised there's a dry square of cloth left in the house. The amount of weeping that has gone on this last 6 months would fill the Serpentine and Hyde Park."
He chided himself for being unfeeling. She had suffered both great loss and now a great calamity. He should make allowances. Though it seemed he'd been making allowances for the woman for most of his life. Her dress seemed to swallow the light from the fireplace and wall sconces. Still wearing black bombazine from head to foot, though the time of deepest mourning had passed months ago. He continued to wear a black coat out of deference to her feelings, but much to his mother's dislike, He'd taken to wearing his buff deerskin breeches and a grey waistcoat. Every time she noticed he'd had his tailor remove the black cloth-covered buttons on his jacket and return the brass originals, she would pucker her lips and let a pair of tears form on her lower lashes. "I suppose I have no choice but to accept it. But it seems Gorty's been most cruel to me. I feel as if I am Naomi from the Bible. You might as well call me Mara." More sniffs and eye-wiping. "That's what she said, wasn't it? When everything had been taken from her, that her name now meant bitter? I'm just empty. How can this be happening? I didn't plan for any of this." Her voice vacillated, as if she didn't know whether to feel angry or just victimized.
"A son with higher expectations than mine of his relationship with his mother might take offense. You lost your husband and your eldest, but I still remain. And your daughter and your widowed daughter-in-law. Not to mention a new grandchild."
Marcus kept his voice bland, as he always strove to do in her presence. He was who he was, no more, no less, born in the order God had chosen. As a second son, he no longer resented the affection lavished on his elder brother. Though his parents had three children, only one had mattered when it came to the succession. Sophie, his younger sister, had been attended and sponsored and chaperoned. But his father had purchased a major's commission for Marcus the moment he'd earned his sheepskin from Oxford. He was the spare, not the heir. He had ceased to let it rankle years ago, for the most part. "I have a grandchild." "Yes, but not a grandson." Mother sat up. "I wanted a grandson."
"And I wanted you to have one, but God had other plans."
And God's plans had put pay to Marcus's own. Life would be so much easier if God would stay confined to Sunday worship and evening prayers instead of encroaching on Marcus's carefully laid arrangements. "God has abandoned our family. Or he's punishing me for something. Why else would he treat me this way?" She put her hand to her throat, the tears thickening her voice. "Oh, it's all such a mess. Still, I suppose we'll have to move forward. We have no choice. Tomorrow we'll begin packing for London."
"London?"
"Of course. Now that your circumstances have changed, we must begin the search." A fortifying breath lifted her shoulders.
"The search?"
He sounded like a parrot.
"For what?"
"Well, for a suitable bride for you. I made inquiries last season, but I wasn't aiming high enough, I suppose. I was looking for a baronet's daughter, or a squire's. But now I have to start over." The hawsers tightened around his chest.
"I'm in no rush. After all, it's only been a few months since our bereavement, and barely an hour since it all became official."
A wife was the farthest thing from his mind right now. His life up to this point had been carefully ordered. Everything divided, kept separate and tidy. Work, society, family, God. Adding the responsibilities of a dukedom left little room for a wife. "You might not be in a rush. In fact, I've never known a time when you were. But I am. We've learned, much to our regret, how quickly circumstances can change. You must marry soon and set up your nursery. It's your duty to this family and to the memory of those we've lost." Her backbone stiffened, and for the first time in months, a gleam entered her eyes. "I shall make a list and begin my inquiries. Or..."
"Or?"
He was doing it again, mimicking her. "Or you could marry Scylla." She said the words slowly, as if only now thinking of them. But he wondered, had this been a plan for months now, should the infant be a female? "That would solve a multitude of issues. She's in need of a husband. She's of noble birth. And she's obviously fertile." A shudder racked down Marcus's spine. Scylla was a nice woman, but she was also timid, sensitive, and if he was honest, boring. She had suited his staid, proper, and dutiful brother right down to the grounds. But Marcus couldn't imagine himself married to her. Of course, he couldn't imagine himself married to anyone. At least not yet.
It's too soon to make a decision like that. And it's too late at night. Go to bed, madam. We'll no doubt talk about it in the morning.
She rose, gathering her dignity around her like a coronation rope. If there was a silver lining to the dark clouds hanging over his life, it was that at least a hunt for a suitable bride would give her something else to think about than her bereavement. Of course he would have the final say, but her quest would keep her occupied and out of his hair for a while. For the first time in recent memory, she swept from the room with an echo of her former imperious manner. The fire popped and the mantel clock ticked, the only sounds in the room. What was he supposed to do now? He needed to send word to London, ask for direction. Partridge would take the message. He would have to wait for a return missive to come from Sir Noel. His superior would know what to do. Though if his mother was serious about leaving for the city right away, he might wait and speak with Sir Noel in person. Sir Noel would answer the question foremost in Marcus's mind. The question he'd wrestled with ever since he'd received word that his father, the Duke, and his brother, the heir, had been killed in a carriage accident almost 7 months ago. If Marcus was now forced to become the Duke of Haverly, could he still continue his work for the crown? London, England, February 1, 1814. This is your last chance, Charlotte. If you don't find a husband this season, you're finished. Your father won't impoverish himself further, and I can't say I blame him. 3 seasons on the marriage mark really is the outside limit. Lady Charlotte Tiptree looked up, one tendril of hair twined around her index finger. Her concentration broken, she tucked a slip of paper into her book on Roman history to mark her place and forced herself to return to the 19th century. I'm sorry, Mother. Were you speaking to me? You're the only other person in the drawing room, are you not? Please put that down and pay attention. Why must I always drag your nose out of some tome or other? If your father catches you reading again, I don't know what he'll do. Mother shook her head, her hands fluttering. Mother's hands always fluttered, especially when she was agitated. And sit up, like a proper lady. I don't know what your posture will become if you continue to lounge like a sultan. It's as if we didn't go to great expense to see you become a lady. What did they teach you at that finishing school? Refraining from rolling her eyes, another gesture that would get her a scolding, Charlotte pulled her legs off the arm of the deep chair and put her feet on the floor. It had taken an age to get into a comfortable reading position, and now all that effort was wasted. She smoothed her plain grey skirt. The dress was serviceable and chaste, covering her from neck to ankles, but nothing about it was pretty. None of her clothes were really pretty, her father feeling such fripperies and unnecessary expense. He could pinch a shilling until the king's profile cried. And as for the finishing school, it was more of a prison on a barren wasteland in Dartmoor, run by an impoverished gentlewoman with no sense of humour. The Hitchens School for Young Ladies was an academy so obscure. Charlotte had been one of only a handful of students, and none of those with social aspirations, a titled family. It had been less expensive than sending her to Switzerland with other girls of her rank. Plastering a pleasant, slightly vacant expression on her face, the aspect mother thought all young ladies should wear, Charlotte put her feet primly together and straightened her shoulders. "What is it you'd like to speak about?" Though she knew. It had been the topic of many a tedious conversation throughout the summer, the fall, and over the interminable holidays. Mother exhaled, her features relaxing into kinder lines. "I don't mean to nag, but you must face the truth. If you don't change your ways, you're going to wind up a spinster. You're nearly there now,
Your father has spent all the money he intends to in order to see you prepared to take your place in society. What kind of a thank you will it be if you squander your last opportunity? You're not getting any younger. And there will be many fresh faces in the ton again this year. If you don't put yourself out to be agreeable, to be the sort of woman a peer is looking for in a wife... She gripped her fingers in her lap. Something hovered on her lips, and Charlotte tensed. Mother rarely hesitated when father wasn't present, so whatever it was must be momentous. Mother took a deep breath, as if fortifying herself. Your father has instructed me to inform you that if you are not engaged to be married before Easter Sunday, he will have no choice but to send you to live at Aunt Philomena's in Yorkshire. Tugging a handkerchief from her sleeve, she waved it as she talked. The scent of her lavender sachet is filling the air. Philomena broached the subject herself, and he's latched on to the idea. I tried to talk him out of it, but he's adamant. He says your lack of a husband is your own fault, and that becoming Aunt Philomena's companion would be fitting punishment for your behaviour over the last 2 years. Charlotte's mind went blank. This was a new twist. Father had occasionally made vague statements as to her future, but nothing this definite or dire. Aunt Philomena, she winced. To be accurate, she was Charlotte's great-aunt on her father's side. Having just endured the Christmas holidays with her at the Tiptree estate in Essex, the thought of a life sentence as her companion drained the blood from Charlotte's head. Surely this was an idle threat. Her father couldn't be so unfeeling, could he? Aunt Philomena complained about everything. Nothing suited or satisfied her, and her voice could crack glass. She must go through a half dozen paid companions every year because none of them could abide her for more than a few weeks. Either that or she fired them for any of 100 petty reasons. But as a relative, Charlotte would not be allowed to quit, and Aunt Philomena would be delighted to have a servant who couldn't give her notice, no matter how poorly she treated her. No wonder she'd planted the seeds of the notion for father to consider. And father would surely jump at the chance to fob Charlotte in the expense of keeping her off on somebody else. But Aunt Philomena? Philomena smelled perpetually of naphtha soap, vegetable tonic, and ceaseless discontent. But Charlotte's only escape would be to find a husband? Was there no other answer? No way to avoid either fate? It wasn't that she was averse to having a husband and a family, but the men of the ton were also boring or boorish, or both. Self-absorbed, idle, lightweight. None of them seemed to do anything constructive or important with their lives. Mother put on a brave, encouraging face. You're not unpleasant to look at. You are the daughter of an earl, and you have a proper education and training in deportment. You would be an acceptable bride if you'd only try. All it requires is that you exert yourself. Perhaps use a bit of flattery, a bit of coquettishness. Make a man feel good about himself. Show an interest in something other than your books, and perhaps flirt a little. Flirt. Act like an empty-headed mist who couldn't cross a ballroom unless the man gave her directions and lent his arm for her to lean upon. Don't make that face at me, young lady. It's not wrong to be smart, but it is wrong to assume that everyone else is stupid compared to you. If you continue to make potential suitors look foolish with your sharp tongue, you're destined for Yorkshire and the life of a lady's companion. And you might as well forego this season and head to Aunt Philomena's now. Her mother's voice had sharpened, and a shaft hit true. Charlotte nodded, letting her chin drop. Knowing she'd been guilty of handing out set-downs when she lost her patience with the shallowness of conversations at balls and dinners. But how could she possibly marry a man who bordered a sawdust? If only she could meet someone who actually did something with his life, who could claim to have read any book in the last year, who did more than talk about his haberdashery or his driving skill with a coach and four, someone who wasn't looking for a bit of fluff to admire him and remind him how wonderful he was. someone who might actually be capable of fidelity and genuine love, and so nurturing conversation. Perhaps someone who could see behind the plain dresses and severe hairstyle prescribed by her parents to the person she was inside.
Now, her mother said, brisk and businesslike, as she rose from her chair, put that book away and get your cloak.
We're going to start as we mean to go on. I've received an invitation to meet some friends at the Frost Festival. It opens today, and there'll be lots of people there with whom to mingle. All the most fashionable persons will turn up for the occasion. I expect you to be polite to those we meet. In fact, say as little as possible, and you'll be fine. Dress warmly. I can't remember a winter this cold, and it's bound to be worse on the river.
Charlotte had about as much experience holding her tongue as she did flirting. She said her jaw mutinously, but she obeyed, taking the book along with her to her room, lest her father come across it and confiscate it.
An hour later, when Charlotte stepped out of the carriage at the top of the steps leading down to the Thames, her mother's claims of cold seemed an understatement. Icy wind scudded over the cobbles and whipped at her bonnet ties. For the first time in years, the weather had been so bitterly cold that the river had frozen completely. Enterprising souls had used this phenomenon to revive the Frost Festival, and crowds had gathered for the entertainment.
Come! I've arranged to meet someone on the quay.
Her mother gathered her woolen cloak about her, her cheeks already pink with cold, but her eyes bright and eager. Mother, like the rest of the ton, loved any reason to socialise, and the temperature wouldn't daunt her if it meant a chance to gather with friends. Charlotte burrowed her hands into a knitted muff and followed Mother down the steps, careful where she placed her feet on the uneven stone. All around her, people laughed and called. Vendors hawked their wares, and children wove and dove between the revellers. Smoke from braziers and campfires whipped around, propelled by the stiff breeze, and the aromas of cooking meat and yeasty ale enticed investigation. A small city had sprung up on the solid surface of the river. Booths, tents, shacks. Straw had been strewn in paths to make impromptu streets. Standing as they were above the icy surface on the pier, Charlotte observed a juggler entertaining a crescent of onlookers, and she spied a thin urchin dipping into the pocket of one jovial man, where he was distracted. She checked that her reticule was secured around her wrist and nestled deep into her muff. All summer long she had been saving to purchase a subscription to a lending library for the time she would be in London. Her father rarely turned any money over to her, and she'd had to hoard and scrape to purchase each of the treasured books in her collection. She couldn't afford to be robbed if she was to have new reading material this season. A library subscription would allow her to read as much as she wanted of books she could never afford to purchase.
There they are!
Mother took Charlotte's elbow and tugged her toward the end of the pier.
And they've brought Dudley!
A groan worked its way up Charlotte's throat, and her shoulders sagged.
They were meeting the Bosworths? Dudley Bosworth?
Mother hurried toward her friends while speaking in a low tone.
If you won't take care of the matter of finding a husband yourself, I'm going to have to intervene. Now, be nice.
All too soon Dudley was bowing over her hand, his rounded face parting in a reluctant smile.
Hello, Lady Charlotte.
Was his face red from cold, or was he blushing? Remembering her mother's admonition to keep her mouth shut, Charlotte said nothing, only nodding to him. He'd paid some court to her last season, probably pushed into it by his mother, for he suffered greatly from awkwardness around girls. Charlotte hadn't been interested then. She wasn't interested now. Dudley was nice enough, she supposed, but he was about as exciting as Blancmange.
Charlotte was just telling me how eager she was to see you again. She couldn't wait to come to the festival, knowing you'd be here,
Mother said, sending a warning glance Charlotte's way, forbidding any contradiction to this bald-faced lie.
We were delighted to know you were coming, my dear,
Mrs. Bosworth looked fondly from her son to Charlotte.
Dudley was most anxious to see you too.
She inclined her head a little, as if encouraging Dudley to say something. He shot a startled glance at his mother, and then covered it up by nodding vigorously. So that was the direction in which the land lay, ambushed by their parents. Charlotte turned away under the guise of dealing with the wind, whipping her plain woolen cloak around her, and a bookseller's store caught her eye below. If only she could escape to that little oasis in the crowds.
"Let's take in some of the festivities, shall we?"
Mr. Bosworth clapped his gloved hands together, and then rubbed his palms against one another, as if anticipating all he would see and do. Dudley stood between Charlotte and her mother, shifting his weight. He half offered his arm to Charlotte, and the other to her mother, then stilt. His father saw the dilemma.
"You escort Charlotte, my boy."
He held out both elbows to his wife and mother, and they strolled back along the length of the pier, leaving Dudley and Charlotte to come along behind. Taking his arm meant removing her hand from her muff, a proposition she didn't relish. She was more than capable of walking without support, and her hand would freeze through her glove. Still, proprieties. Reluctantly, she placed her hand in the crook of his elbow.
It's good to see you again, Dudley said. I hope you had a pleasant Christmas.
Yes, thank you, she lied, remembering the strident irritation of Aunt Philomena's petulance. She would be good. She wouldn't say or do anything to embarrass her mother or Dudley. She would hold her tongue. She would not be packed off to Yorkshire like a naughty child. She hoped she was up to the task. People jostled and pushed in around them, and Charlotte felt her muscles tightening. She didn't like crowds. Her eyes darted, looking for avenues of escape amongst the throng. The descent from the pier to river level brought a new perspective. She now looked up the embankment of the street, a view she'd never had before. Dudley proved useful, guiding her through the shoppers and revellers to one of the straw-strewn paths. Her mother and the Bosworths had stopped at a cart to admire a display of silk shawls, but Charlotte pulled gently on Dudley's arm in the direction of the bookseller she'd spied from above. If she had to be here, she was going to see something she liked. The man minding the bookstore doffed his cap and blew on his hands. His gloves had no fingertips, possibly to make him more adept at picking up and leafing through his merchandise. And as a consequence, his fingers were red as cherries.
"Sir, you look like a scholar. Are you hoping to stock your library? I've several impressive volumes that will look magnificent on your shelves."
He spoke to Dudley, ignoring Charlotte. Dudley shook his head, sputtering.
No, sir. I'm not looking for books."
"A pity." Charlotte touched the spines of a tray of books set in an angle to display their titles. She loved everything about books. The beautiful bindings, the mesmeric end papers, the heft, the smell. And that was not even counting the words and worlds they held. Her own small library of getting on for a dozen volumes was her most precious possession. Each book carefully saved for, pored over, and treasured.
"Ma'am, the novels are over here. I've a nice selection."
He directed her to a shelf to the right of the booth. Charlotte enjoyed a good novel, but at the moment she was interested in something more scholarly to sink her teeth into. "Do you have anything on Greek history?" She'd love to read a few pages, snatch a few moments, a few words and paragraphs to save her later. The bookseller put on a patronizing grin.
"Are you buying for a gentleman, friend? Surely a mere woman wouldn't be interested in something as taxing as Greek history."
He shook his head, winking at Dudley.
"I have some manuals on home management, and a few recipe books here somewhere that might suit a lady like you."
Frustration burned its way up her chest.
"What utter twaddle! I may be a mere woman, but I am certainly capable of comprehending a history book for my own education and enjoyment. Women aren't relegated to only perusing recipes and fiction, you know.
The words flew out in a torrent, and her voice rose.
Of all the idiotic...
Charlotte broke off, and she became aware she...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?